Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Here we would go Facebook Live with this as well. John does have his phone with him, so if you have any questions, you have any comments, you can share them with us, and we will look at a couple of those during the Facebook Live and during the podcast. But
I'll say this. Back when the Cleveland Indians last won a World Series, there was only the only phone that you had was, you know, a landline, and it might have had an exchange with five numbers.
Say, yeah, it was 5-5-2-7-3.
Exactly. And then when the Chicago Cubs won a World Series, there were you did have telephones, but they were, I bet you had some competing, there were probably still active telegraph lines in 1908 lot of the country.
I was going to say, you may have a phone. There might be a phone on your block, but yeah. In many cases, or you know, there were cities that didn't have, and you weren't connected at that point yet to the
long
national
distance,
interchange.
Exactly.
It was, you could call someone in your city.
And then when the Dodgers won a World Series, I had cell phones, but they were it was like in Wall Street. It was like the Michael Douglas variety. It was like the giant phone. And the same,
it was
pretty
attached
much
to your car.
Pretty much the same thing for, and I guess the last time the Blue Jays won one in 1993, I remember the Weezer song I still listen to all the time. It was a B-side. It was Jamie, where it says, who's dialing your car phone? They don't say, when I sing it, I say, who's dialing your cell phone?
Well,
they say car phone.
Let's put it this way. The last team that's left, the most recent team to win, that was still at a time where you either had an address book or Rolodex, or you memorized phone numbers.
Because correct.
You didn't just say, I'm going to dial so-and-so. You actually had to know the
name. I didn't have a computer. When I was in college and the Blue Jays beat the Braves in 1992, which was a big deal. Where we both went to school in the Southeast, and it was a big deal when the Braves won the World Series at our colleges. I mean, like when Francisco Cabrera hit that hit, yeah. The campus got teepeed. It got rolled at Carolina. I remember distinctly the next morning. It was a similar to reaction to if North Carolina had gone to the Final Four, which it did the previous year and the next year. But 92, I mean, people went nuts for it. In any case, it's been a long time since any of these teams rocked or rolled. And right now the Indians are a game away from their first World Series since, 1997? Mm-hmm. Their first pennant. So JJ, it's going to be last night was a fascinating game. We'll talk about that. And get right into it here.
Do we want to intro it in?
No, because we have Dave Slade. So
okay.
We don't have to do that. So last night, first off, the first thing that I was running errands in the first inning, so I missed seeing exactly what happened with Trevor Bauer. I've gone back and watched it, but I would have tweeted that we did have the two Division I strikeouts leaders from back-to-back years, 2011 and 2012. And those guys are boys. Trevor Bauer tweeted, I remember, in 2012, hey, congratulations, Marcus Stroman, for keeping the Division I strikeouts title in the Duke basketball fan family. And they went back and forth, and I unfollowed Bauer for his Duke basketball fandom. But so last night could have been an extremely compelling starting pitching matchup, JJ, but we had one short-circuited and then one that went on entirely too long, where it just seems like John Gibbons hasn't been watching the rest of the postseason of you can't leave your starting pitcher out there too long, and he did with Marcus Stroman.
The best way to put it is that he treated Stroman, to me, like he was a Bumgarner, like he was a
regular season game.
Right. And like he was a Bumgarner, like he was a Kershaw, like he was a Kluber, and I don't think Stroman's there yet. And I think that's part, I don't think that he is a guy yet. He's a good pitcher.
Right.
Very good pitcher. But I don't think he's a guy that you say he's so good that him the third time through the lineup is better than what we've got in the pen.
I think I actually would say he's a good pitcher, but he's not very good yet. He's this year,
he's inconsistent.
He gives up a lot of home runs. And, height doesn't measure heart, but height does matter when you don't get playing. And when he misses, he misses flat, and he misses punished. And he got punished by Kipnis and Napoli last night. And it was also just the other lesson I thought of last night was the Indians' bullpen, besides the two-headed monster, but probably besides Andrew Miller and then his running mate.
Sidekick.
Exactly, Cody Allen.
We'll get to the flipping of them.
Which was fascinating. But the rest of it is, I wouldn't say a rogues gallery, but it's like the ghosts of past 7 to 10 top 10 prospect rankings. I rank Zach McAllister in the Yankees as a, hey, could be a back-end starter. I rank Jeff Manship with the Twins, like, oh, he could be a back-end starter. And they both tried to be back-end starters.
And the more what they ended up being is useful relievers.
That's right. And Danny Otero, we never ranked as a back-end starter, but we did. He did job shadow us in 2004 in the old BA office on Main Street.
I remember that.
Yeah, so when he was at Duke, he job shadowed us. So a lot of Duke in the house last night in the on the mound with Otero and Stroman and then Duke basketball fan Trevor Bauer. But pretty impressive job by Terry Francona and by the whole Indians team to just – you know, overcome that bloody start by Trevor Bauer. And now they're with a 3-0 lead when really they haven't hit great in this series at all, but they've pitched outstanding and they have the single best players, the two best players in this series for me, Lindor and Andrew Miller.
The other fascinating part of that for me is that they did it last night where their starting pitcher left the game in the first and they didn't burn anyone out.
Like, right.
The crazy thing is that that was something where they didn't, I don't think Mike Clevenger didn't pitch.
Right.
And
Ryan Merritt's going to start game four, it sounds like, with one major league start under his belt.
But they did that, and there's really not anyone that they threw last night where you say, there is no scenario in which this guy pitches tomorrow.
Right.
They did it where it was like no one pitched two innings. They didn't burn out a bullpen, which does show partly how insane the bullpens, how insanely large the bullpens are during the postseason. But I do think it also shows us it is something where I don't even know if this is going to be good for baseball in the long term, but it does show us where we keep being reminded with it is easier. It is easier to find relievers
yes.
who can go through three, four, five, six batters than it is to find guys who can go through a lineup for 18 to 27 batters.
No question.
Way easier.
No question.
And what we're seeing in this playoffs is, I mean, the Indians are the prime example of this because the Indians right now, if you take their projected rotation at the start of the season, you have Kluber. In this right. series, essentially, you're going to have Kluber left, Josh Tomlin, who was on the fringe of right. being part of that rotation.
He was like their fifth or sixth starter early in the year.
And that's it.
Those are the last healthy guys standing.
And they're up 3-0. Kluber pitched great. Tomlin pitched very well for, you know, but really what it comes down to is I almost like from a, it's the 162 is different, obviously. However, from an allocation standpoint, if the Indians do win this year, because we know the league's a copycat league, if the Indians win it this year, they're coming on the heels of the Giants 2 years ago were very much a ace dominated. They won in the playoffs
right.
in large part because they had an ace and they had a good pitching staff. But the Royals have not really had an ace. The Royals were
certainly
very much
not.
A bullpen oriented team.
But they did have starters win five innings.
Right.
You know?
The Indians, I mean, again, yeah. like if Ryan Merritt, and again, you know, is Merritt going to start game four? Is he going to start game five? But if Ryan Merritt makes a start, I would imagine that the Indians will look at that as if they get 14, 15 batters out of them. I'm not talking 14, 15
right.
outs. 14, 15 batters out of them, they'll go, good job tonight, and let's go.
I don't know that one game, that because they were able to bullpen last night's game, is going to change everything. I do think that it's a big enough change that teams look for starters to go five innings in the postseason. Mm-hmm. And I think we've been talking about that.
I'm not saying
that
everyone's going to go to two innings.
Right. But I mean, like, there's no doubt that the trend lines are for fewer innings from starters. There's just no question about it. And that's not going to abate in any way, shape, or form unless the rules get changed. Whether that's more interesting, is that better? Is that going to make baseball grow as a sport, you know, in fan appeal? If you're watching a playoff game and instead of tuning in for Stroman versus Bauer, you get Otero versus Stroman, and then you get Manship, and then you
Otero
get
and Manship and McAllister.
I'm saying so from an entertainment standpoint, all these trend lines are in the wrong direction. From a winning standpoint, I understand why the trend lines are in the direction they're in. But I mean, if we're asking the Russell Crowe question, are you entertained? I'm not by bullpenning. It's not entertaining. You don't build stars that way. Again, we just had the contrast the other day. It was it's much more entertaining and more compelling as television when it's Clayton Kershaw show versus the bullpen show. It just is.
Because Andrew Miller can be entertaining, but the reality of it is that you're not going to have as many fascinating guys, big names pitching. When you talk about the casual fan.
Yeah.
Now, but let me ask you. We've talked in the office about this, and we have said, I mean, there are obvious ways. If you want to get rid of the sixth pitcher inning, which when you talk about from a television standpoint is a disaster.
Brutal.
Sixth pitcher inning is a disaster because you are really talking about the minute you go to the sixth pitcher inning, that's a 35-minute inning before anything else happens.
Half inning.
Because
you have a 66-minute inning in one of those games.
Right, and you're saying before anything else happens. And let's say if you have a six-pitcher inning, probably are other things happening. But you're talking about, okay, every 2 to 5 minutes there, you're going to have a three-minute break.
Right.
That's
and not entertaining.
3 to 4 minute break. That you can – there are ways you can legislate that. You can say you have to face two batters. You can only have – X number of pitching changes in an inning, barring an injury, and if that injury happens, then that person has to go on the DL. There's things you can do for that. It's a lot tougher. It's not realistic to say, no, your starting pitcher has to go three innings, has to go five innings, I'm sorry, he gave up 10 runs in the first, but you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
That's messing with the fabric of the game to a level that just cutting down on bullpen changes in inning.
It's not the same. Yeah, not the same level for sure. I would love to have people feedback on this either on our Twitter at JJCoop36. I'm at John Manuel BA or here at Facebook Live. We do have several questions. We've got Paul and Eric and Sam who are all chatting with each other, Indians fans. We're glad to provide you the forum with which to chat. I already lost my question. Jerry Halbert. What's our take on Napoli's contributions? I understand that he's been very inspirational. JJ, I do think there's something to this, that Mike Napoli has been this interesting storyline career of when he was an Angel, and there was a thread with a lot of the I'm going to go look this up while you talk. I'll take a quick break and find out who his signing scout was. Actually, I think I have this on. I'll find it on my desktop. But there were scouting directors quizzing each other about who his signing scout was last night, whether it was Mike Silvestri of the Angels or whether it was Todd Klaus. But Mike Napoli signed with the Angels, and basically Mike Socha got rid of him because he didn't think he was good enough on defense. Talk about cutting off your nose to spite your face. All he's done is won. Both the Angels were good when he was there. The Rangers won with him. The Red Sox won a World Series with him. And now he might get the Indians of the World Series. He might play in his third different World Series for his third different team. Pretty impressive for a right converted catcher first baseman.
He is, as we talked about in the office, he's an archetype type guy.
He's become that,
because
yes.
Now when you talk to guys, you get Napoli comps.
All the time.
As I think you had one scout say to you, or your one front office official say, everyone's got a Napoli.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean that they're going to be Mike Napoli. But everyone has a catcher, usually a right catcher, who you're trying to make a catcher, who you know that the power's there. There's probably enough hit if he can catch, but it doesn't know. If you've got to move that guy to first base, you don't know if it's going to really work there. Napoli is the perfect example of what that guy can be.
Right.
And really for him, I do think that there's some advantage. I do think if Mike Napoli, I'll throw this out and what you think about it. If Mike Napoli couldn't have caught at all, I don't know if he has anything like this career. I know that when it's all said and done, the Mike Napoli career is not going to be remembered in any way for his catching, and it shouldn't be. That never was the best thing that he does. But I think that being a catcher, fringy enough as it was, but being a catcher gave him the chance to get established at the big league level, which then gave him the chance to develop into the all-around hitter slugger that he has become, where if he had have just been a first baseman, it may have been too hard to clear that bar, because that is a very hard bar to clear to get regular at-bats as a right first baseman.
I think you nailed it. I don't think there's any question that got his foot in the door.
And then by the time he couldn't catch enough to catch, by that point he had established himself and he had developed into a well-refined enough major league hitter, major league slugger, that you say, we can take him. We can use him. And because even that transition, there was that little stretch where it was like he was becoming less and less of a catcher.
Right.
But there's still in the back of your mind, it's like, well, he adds value to our roster, because if we need to, we could throw him back there.
I don't think there's a question. I think you nailed it. That's what got his foot in the door in the first place was being a catcher. And now he's certainly more flexible. You can see he's changed his body over the years from what he was 10 years ago. And it does seem like he's got mojo too. Like he's got a little of that Johnny Gomes just kind of like soul that makes him a real positive in a clubhouse. That probably is one of the reasons why he got there as a catcher, because it certainly wasn't the catch and throw.
Right.
He probably had a good rapport with pitchers. Makeup absolutely.
Is a valuable thing about being a catcher making it or not.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, because this is going back 10 years roughly, it was, again, Napoli couldn't catch well enough for the Angels.
Yeah.
And so they basically went with Jeff Mathis instead.
Correct.
They made the wrong call.
Yeah, I mean, like in the words of the old guy in The Last Crusade, they chose poorly.
I know Jeff Mathis is still a big leaguer, but you would rather have Napoli than Mathis. I don't think it's really a...
Connor Glass is going to be mad at me because I can't find this signing spreadsheet that he did for us like in 2013 of all the guys who have ever been in the handbook with their signing scouts. And I'm sorry that I can't find that.
While you're looking up more questions, I did want to make... last night, okay, so obviously one of the stories, as you mentioned, was Bauer and the bloody... the oozing. I mean,
yes. The bloody pinky game.
The bloody pinky.
Oh, just the bloody pinky inning.
Which, you know, is fascinating. That I learned a little bit something last night, like that there are limits to what they can do to...
With stitches?
Well, not just with stitches, but there are things that if he wasn't a pitcher, you would do that you can't do because then it becomes a foreign substance, all that, which... That was
interesting, yes.
Credit to, I think it was Buster Olney for that nice piece on that.
They were talking a little bit about that on the broadcast, John Shambi and Chris Singleton, while I was running to get Chinese food. We're talking about that on the broadcast.
But I do think Trevor Bauer understands that. I'm not saying he does not bring this some on himself. Because
he does.
Because Trevor Bauer is an intelligent guy who knows he's intelligent and has very strong opinions of what he... And that is rubbed raw multiple teams. That's why he was... One of the reasons that he was jettisoned very quickly. The Diamondbacks' first-round pick, who pretty much never got settled there before, was like, we are shipping you off because we are not confident in you.
Yeah, we're tired of dealing with this mess.
But I do think in the case of the drone accident, maybe we haven't talked about this also, maybe you disagree, but I do think in the case of this drone accident that because it's Trevor Bauer, it is being made up into this thing. Clearly, that is an accident. Trevor Bauer, there was no part of it on an off day where Trevor Bauer went, I'm going to slice my finger. Or even, you know, I got a chance I might slice my finger here. Let's do this anyway.
Right.
If another player had gone out on their off day and had gone golfing, which, you know, their hobby or whatever.
Right.
And something had happened and, like, you know what? There was a freak injury, a freak accident, and they're not going to be able to go. It would have been... I'm not saying there would not have been some criticism. You're in the playoffs. Why are you... But it would have been, I do believe, really, it would have been treated differently than it is with Trevor Bauer because...
Shouldn't it be treated differently because it's Trevor Bauer? Because he has a history of not being... He is perceived as not being a team player. That's where this comes from. And by doing this, he totally let his entire team down and put them in a much more difficult position to win the game. They won the game anyway. But that's where this comes from, is that Trevor Bauer has earned the reputation of me before we. And that's why he got extra criticism, is that he does not do what everybody else does. And sometimes that upsets a fabric of a clubhouse. It's more to Terry Francona's credit that it has it in Cleveland. And it was more, I think, to the detriment of the Diamondbacks. They devalued their own prospect because they let that dominate the Trevor Bauer evaluation, as opposed to, you know, at UCLA, where John Savage, again, took credit. He had two great pitchers, and they were nothing alike. And I tell you the story. I remember seeing Garrett Cole in the Fall League. That must have been in 2011, the year he was drafted. And seeing him in the Fall League and, you know, walking and talking to him for like 15 minutes and talking about Trevor. He was like, look, we got along, but we're totally different people. Nothing alike. And we had to learn to be teammates. And they did. And because of that, UCLA got to the national championships years in 2010. You know, that was a big reason why they did. It was because Cole and Bauer got along and pulled the same direction. Also because they were both freaking good.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
And they were really good.
That is one of the best 1-2 punches that you will ever see in college baseball.
But that's why Bauer, he deserves the extra criticism because he does, he's earned it. He's brought it on and he's totally brought it on himself.
And it is.
He did leave his team out to dry in that game. And they were fortunate to win the game. So, I mean, what happens now? What if they go to the World Series and this doesn't work against the Dodgers? Well, that's one of the questions. John and JJ, do you think the Indians sweep? Asked by Eric Simmons. Honestly, I don't think they sweep because I think they're starting Ryan Merritt in game four. I think the Blue Jays will win the game.
Well, let's go through this. So your choices are, if you're Francona, who's pretty much done everything right so far in the playoffs, but your choices are, do you bring back, you've got a 3-0 lead. Do you bring back Kluber? And by doing so, at least open up the opportunity that if this goes awry and you need Kluber in game seven, is much more of an option if he goes game four. Or do you basically treat it as, you know what, this is the Ryan Merritt, Mike Clevenger game.
Right.
Where if we get six or seven out of those and it may be ugly and we may be down far enough, quickly enough, where we go, you know what, Andrew, you know, Miller's not pitching tonight. Allen's not pitching tonight. Brian Shaw's not pitching tonight. Okay, we gave him one. It's 3-1. Arrested Kluber, arrested Miller, arrested Allen, arrested Shaw are there for game five, which gives you a better chance probably of winning game five. Or do you say, you know what, you treat the one you can win right now, we have a better chance of winning with Kluber, and it gives us a little bit of a fallback that you don't have as much. I'm not saying it's not even in this playoffs what we've seen after we see with Clayton Kershaw and everything. Right. I'm not saying if Corey Kluber pitches in game five that there's no chance he pitches in game seven. It'd be five, and then there would be a break for one day, and then game six, and then game seven. He would not pitch as far. He would maybe not be as effective. But right. So it's not, to me, it's not a slam dunk.
I agree.
As maybe it would seem like it is. You can either basically go with game four thinking we may lose game four, but we really should win five or six or seven. Or you can say, I mean, which way would you fall?
I think Terry Francona's experience is that a 3-0 lead is not safe. So I think his experience is you play to win the game. Herm Edwards' epic quote is, nothing is more true in sports. You play to win the game, and Francona has seen what can happen when you have a 3-0 lead and you lose that first game. You just don't want to let the Blue Jays think they can get back in this series. So I think he'll play to win the game, but I think to win the game, his best chance is to not use Corey Kluber tonight on short rest. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think that the best way to win the game is to use the pitchers who you have scheduled to pitch. And you just showed your team yesterday, hey, guys, we won this game with Danny Otero and Jeff Manship and Brian Shaw pitching early. And we can do that again in game
right, because
four,
again, none of those guys, in game three. None right. of those guys went three innings or anything where you say they have nothing left.
And then the thing is, you know, for game five, you do have Kluber. So you can you do have a guy who you're in good shape to go six innings and get you to that two-headed monster of Allen with his little small head.
I was
going to
say, it's like a one and a half headed monster.
Right.
Know.
It's like the
Cody Allen, there's a halo effect. If you pitch with Andrew Miller,
yes,
it makes you seem more dominating.
You really do. It's a good running mate to have. Andrew Miller is an excellent running mate to have, and that's a good ticket. I'd vote for the Miller-Allen ticket because Andrew Miller is really, really good at what he does.
We just talked about Francona a little bit, and that was something that you were talking about before.
Yeah, it'd be a good way to wrap. Although, I will double-check. Yeah. Real quick, Eric Simmons asks, is this the year the Cubs finally get to the World Series? I think it is.
I think so, too.
I do. I agree on that one. And Paul Evice, sorry, Paul, I don't know how you pronounce your last name. Making a pitcher face two batters is messing with the fabric of the game. I would posit that the fabric of the game has been messed with enough by the preponderance of specialization in bullpens. So Tony La Russa unleashed this Pandora's box on the rest of us, and I'm ready to put it back in the box a little
when
bit.
When you say that, like when you say messing with the fabric of the game, if you went back to baseball in its origins, not even origins, 70 years into the game, and you pick someone up from there and put them into 2016, they would not understand. Like, they would really be like, wait, what is he doing?
But in 1920, they said that guys who played in the 1880s were watching the game in 1920 and going, these cheap home runs, this is messing with the fabric of the game. Everyone's always said that.
But Ojas is like, wait, he's not starting it tomorrow?
Exactly. That's right. He's messing with the fabric of the game. Four-man rotations of poppycock. So the fabric of the game has been messed with. Paul also asks, can you even risk carrying Bauer on the roster of the World Series? Because if he can't pitch, they may be able to replace him if he had the injury before the series started. That is a big question with Bauer. Can they fix his hand enough in the next week to carry him on the World Series roster? I don't know. I think that's really going to be a question for their medical team.
Their medical team's going to be very busy because then you have, is Danny Salazar done? Is there any hope that Danny Salazar can be back for the World Series?
Yeah.
There's all kind of things
going on. There's a lot of things at play, for sure.
You have to, after last night, you've essentially now had a less than one inning experiment. And what we have determined from that is that the stress of throwing a 95-mile-an-hour fastball seems to be greater than the stitches we're able to handle.
That's right.
And so, at the least, you're gonna have to go a bullpen session where he shows that he can throw more than a few batters. And hey, look, it's still, you know, I should say this. Hey, look, it's still there. It's not bleeding. Because, yeah, that you can't go through that nightmare scenario again. It worked out well last night. You can't go through that again.
Todd Klaus, the Napoli signing scout. So glad I found that. It's driving me nuts. My sister asks, thanks for watching, Cleo. What do you think of the Blue Jays? Jose Bautista saying the American League Championship Series is fixed and the Blue Jays have been at a disadvantage in the strike zone. I echo my sister's sentiments. Wah. Joey Bats is not an easy loser. And
this is one of the things that when you have competitors.
That's right.
This is what happens.
As Jerry Maguire said, we live in a world of tough competitors. That's one of the worst end speeches.
But it is something where if you, the necessary arrogance, if you have that, one of the subsets of that, one of the after effects of that is that it very well may lead to you kind of almost, okay, they don't have us yet. We've just been cheated. We're going to go out and do it today.
That's right. He should talk to Russell Martin because while I love Russell Martin's hands, apparently he's not as good as pitch framing as Roberto Perez, and he hasn't been helping his pitchers, and they needed the help in this series getting those close calls. Last but not least for me, JJ, I do think that the rest of us who aren't in Canada, I'm sure Canadians know this and Blue Jays fans know this, but do take a good look at the Blue Jays in Game 4, because Joey Bats, Jose Bautista, has been a great player in Toronto. He's hit 270 home runs in his, I think it's 268 actually, in his 9 seasons there in Toronto. That era is ending. It certainly looks like he's a future DH, maybe a first baseman. His outfield defense, which was exposed last year by the Royals,
should be a great arm is no longer a great arm.
It is not. He has lost arm strength for sure. He's had a hell of a career.
By the way, it is interesting.
I hope he gets paid this offseason, but I don't think it's going to be by the Blue Jays.
It was interesting. This another story, stories that we just have to find time to write, but one of them was about the everyday utility guy.
Yeah.
And I talked to a scout, and he's like, you know who's probably the first guy I turned in as an everyday utility?
Jose Bautista.
Because it's easy to forget that at one point that was kind of, that looked like a logical role for him.
Yeah, Jose Bautista signed by the same scout who also signed Matt Moore. Jack Powell signed him for out of Chipola Junior College and then was out west and signed Matt Moore in New Mexico. So two pretty good guys for him to have signed. Also the last game potentially in a Blue Jay uniform for Edwin Encarnacion. I should do the rest of the podcast like this. First of all, he's one of my favorite players in Major League Baseball because the guy certainly knows how to have fun. Second of all, he's averaged 39 home runs a year the last 5 years. Only guy with more home runs in that span in the big leagues is Chris Davis. Did you know that?
I did not.
Those are the two guys with the most home runs in baseball the last 5 years, Chris Davis and Edwin. And I'm sorry, Edwin's better.
Much more consistent.
And three, Edwin is going to get paid this offseason, so the Blue Jays' identity for the last 7 years basically has been their right-handed power hitters, Bautista and Edwin. The last 5 years, especially those two guys.
I was gonna say, and then in the last two, you've added
the better. Now Josh Donaldson is the better player, and then they added Martin and Tulowitzki, and that quintet is what got them to back-to-back playoffs. That's an impressive quintet of players. they're going to have a new identity. So the old Blue Jays that Alex Anthopoulos and those scouts built, this is the last run for that group. They didn't, you know, draft and develop Edwing and Bautista, but those two guys were the foundation upon which the rest of the team was built.
They didn't draft and that foundation's going away. At the same time, they signed both of them when both of them were viewed as really spare part type players.
Absolutely. I mean, Edwing was acquired in a trade for Scott Rolen,
but then
DFA'd, picked up by the A's, and they DFA'd him, and the Blue Jays got him back and wisely kept him. So, and Jose Bautista, really like the most famous Rule 5 pick vagabond in a long time. No one was Rule 5. They went through four different teams like that.
It was
that
like,
guy.
Man, we like him, but we can't keep him.
The Royals, like him, the Orioles, the Pirates, somebody else, the Mets. Rays, I think. I thought it was the Rays. A lot of teams had Jose Bautista. The Blue Jays kept him, and they were rewarded. So those two guys, pending free agents, and the one flap up here for Edwing.
But to finish up, though, so you had a good point about Terry Francona, about Tito. What was it that you were talking before we went on here about Francona and what this postseason could mean for him?
For me, we've got these two managers who are active in Terry Francona and Bruce Bochy, who together have won five World Series. And Terry Francona, you know, we talk a lot in baseball media about Theo Epstein and how he would go straight to the Hall of Fame if he ended the curse in Boston and then ended the curse in Chicago. Just as a small dissent, I don't believe in curses. But if he ended those two World Series droughts, but Terry Francona might end two World Series droughts, one in Boston as the manager of the 04 Red Sox and 07, but also with Cleveland, which hasn't won a World Series since 1948. And there's certainly mojo with Cleveland. I mean, LeBron certainly helped by coming back to Northeast
Ohio. This could end up being so by far the greatest year in Cleveland sports fans' history.
Correct.
It essentially vanquishes, you know, 50-plus years of...
1964, the last championship in that city before the Cavs this year. And if the Cavs and Indians do the double, I mean, it'd be crazy. But, I mean, I think it... You look at that Indians team and... Their outfield is patchwork in a lot of ways. It's a great infield, but Jose Ramirez certainly is not a profile third baseman. So they got
they're playing a backup catcher.
And 2 years ago, right, 2 years ago when the Indians first like started surging a little bit under Terry Francona, you're like, wow, Yan Gomes would be a big part of this. Yan Gomes got hurt, started to turn back into a pumpkin, and now they have Roberto Perez. And even their rotation right now is decimated. So it's been nimble front office. I mean, making the absolute right move with Andrew Miller.
But not like this. They went out and acquired Jonathan Lucroy, and then that fell apart.
They were told no thanks.
They were told nah. And they still are sitting here one game away from the World Series, having failed to acquire what seemed like one of the biggest acquisitions of the trade deadline.
Right. No, that should have been one of the big deals. And they have a farm system, by the way. These Indians aren't going away. It's a strong farm system. It is, and that's even after the trade with the Yankees. So to me, Terry Francona's legacy is, I wouldn't say on the line, but it's part of it here too. Like we talk about Theo Epstein's. Terry Francona, to me, I think he already has a Hall of Fame managerial resume, personally, two World Series and what he's done. But doing it in Cleveland and winning a World Series in two different cities like that would cement it.
I would say even if he even wins one more and makes it to the World Series with this Cleveland club, where you take in a Cleveland club and you did obviously what he did in Boston, I would say that there you could make the argument there that like even if he didn't win the World Series,
right,
then, especially when you look at this team right now, as you just said, I mean, this is not the team. The Indians front office thought this was going to be a good year, but this was not the team that they intended to be here. The starting rotation is not what they thought it would be.
Absolutely.
The outfield is not what they thought it would be because they thought Michael Brantley would be back to being Michael Brantley.
A lot of things have not gone according
to
plan.
Their catcher is not there. There's so many things that I don't think they went, you know, Lonnie Chisenhall is going to be a, you know,
profile right fielder.
Key right fielder for us in this. All these things, he gets credit for that. Whether, you know, you can't say how much of that because the players deserve credit.
He deserves credit for that, though.
But he does get credit, and he should, for what they've done there.
Good stuff, JJ. And I got to tell you, my right arm got tired.
I was going to say, I'm freaked out by the head wing.
But plus, I'm showing you my poison ivy, which is not good. It's getting worse.
I'm kind of moving like that.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm going to rest my right arm now. But I do, my sister's upset that we ended up talking about the Blue Jays. But I love Ed Wing. I just think he's awesome. And look forward to following his career. I wouldn't mind seeing a couple more games of American League Championship Series. I wouldn't mind seeing a little drama. And just one game of one Blue Jays win. But we're going to get – it's the undercard. It goes back to being the undercard today as it's an afternoon game. Cubs-Dodgers game 3 tonight. And Blue Jays-Indians game 4 this afternoon. Hey, drink it in. This is a great time of year for baseball. Great time of year to subscribe to Baseball America. Organization top 10 start dropping next week,
and this
is
week,
pretty exciting.
Draft report cards are going up this week, which is subscriber only content. So go to baseballamerica.com/store. There's a plethora of ways that you can subscribe. You can get the magazine and the online content. If you get the magazine, you're going to get the online content, but you can also just get the online content if you want. You could get the digital edition. A lot of different ways. So
a lot of different ways to consume Baseball America content because it's 2016. So for some more of that content and to turn off this Facebook Live, he's JJ Cooper. I'm John Manuel. We'll see you back here at facebook.com/baseballamericamag and another Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.